I had gone from buying bargain maps online at the office to doing my own stunts at Marquee. That's a nightclub in Chelsea. New Yorkers are tough, man, and this NYC crew, most of whom had come from 30 Rock, did not mess around. At first, I found the experience overwhelming. From tasks as straightforward as line memorization, to basic etiquette like learning everyone's name, to the creative demands of figuring out the character of Kimmy, this was much more work than I was used to. My jobs until that point had been 18th cast member of The Office, supporting character in Bridesmaids, publicist character on Sofia Coppola's Somewhere, one full day of work with 2-hour European-style lunch break of pasta with cloth napkins, many commercials, none of which took more than a day to shoot, a cashier at a cupcake store, drove a child actor to and from the set of M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, sat in a large tent while he filmed, a cashier at a frozen custard store, various temp jobs involving data entry and typing, made the pizzas at Conway School one Saturday a year. Though I considered myself a hard worker, most of my employment experience until then had consisted of waiting around and dealing with various carbohydrates. This new job would require discipline, stamina, and sustained focus from me, and pathetic as it sounds, I wasn't sure that I was cut out to handle it. One afternoon during the pilot, we were filming a scene where Titus emerges from the shower. I should note here that Titus the character is spelled with one S, and Titus the man is spelled with two. Kimmy is lounging in an armchair asking who the Kardashians are. That scene was later cut, though the Kardashians remain. In any case, during a lighting setup, Titus, the actor, and I were waiting on set in his character's bedroom. We had probably known each other for about 5 days by that point. Do you ever meet someone whom you are convinced you have met before? I don't really believe in past lives, but the minute I met Titus, I felt confident that I knew him already. We had each other's number from the start, for which we are both grateful, because if we didn't understand each other, working together would have been a challenge. This moment of recognition was crystallized for me on the first day of shooting. Titus suggested that we go have lunch the following weekend to celebrate the pilot. I said, yes, we should definitely do that. But everything I had just said was a lie. I am a natural-born shut-in who dreads leaving the couch. Titus thought for a moment before saying, actually, I hate leaving my apartment on the weekend. Let's just text on Saturday instead. What can I say? This man has my heart. Back on set, we asked a production assistant named Greg to take a photo of us so that one day we could show our grandkids. I am sitting on Titus's lap, but because he's only wearing a towel, he looks like he's naked. When Greg showed us the photo, I started laughing so hard that I wet my pants while still sitting on Titus's lap. He remained totally unfazed, and I knew then that in Titus I had a friend forever. After we completed the pilot in late March, we had a long break while Tina and Robert assembled the writer's room, hired additional actors, and began writing the rest of the season. We returned to filming in August, and I was relieved to find that I felt giddy. I was excited to work. And it was fun being in nearly every scene. Working is much more exhilarating than waiting, I quickly learned. And the scripts were insane. Jane Krakowski and Carol Kane joined the show in August, and I had to pinch myself. These are two of America's most extraordinary actresses, and I would now be working with them nearly every day. I feel honored even to be in their presence. The biggest adjustment for me going from The Office to Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was simply the length of the workday. At The Office, we filmed Monday through Friday, usually beginning around 7 a.m. and very rarely going past 7 p.m. Depending on the day, actors had to arrive earlier than 7 for hair and makeup, but I was usually driving home by 4 or 5. During the final episode, there were 2 Saturdays in a row that we had to work, and the cast was bewildered. "This is madness," I remember telling Waldo.
"Yeah, what a tough life you have,"
his shiny plastic eyes replied. The Office was shot documentary style, which meant that the footage was intended to look grainy and unpolished. Most cameras were handheld, and lighting setups were relatively quick. Kimmy is a single-camera show, which refers to the fact that the scene is shot from one angle at a time. Once we shoot the scene from one angle, we move the cameras and the lights to shoot it from a different angle. This results in a longer workday, but it also results in longer naps for actors in between scenes. I get very antsy on set, and I enjoy being outside. I'm like a skittish pony, but with human legs. So despite the longer naps, this new schedule required an adjustment on my part, because I was used to being home in time for Wheel of Fortune. Another adjustment was getting used to the Teamsters. In L.A., actors usually drive themselves to work because everyone has a car. In New York, most shows transport their actors back and forth with the help of Teamsters. The Teamster Union is a labor union dating back to 1903. The name derives from the team of oxen, horses, or mules driven by members in the old days. Hitching a ride this way is an enormous luxury because the actor can presumably learn her lines, stare out the window, or sleep while she is driven to and from work. Because I am chatty and pony-like, I rarely feel comfortable enough to let there be silence in the van, and I usually blabber non-stop on both the ride to work and on the ride home. I guarantee you that the Teamster who is driving me would much, much prefer the silence, but unfortunately, I am unstoppable. One morning, I tried not talking. I went into the back of the van and told my Teamster I was going to take a nap. The actor usually rides up front with the driver. I put on my headphones and closed my eyes. I felt so awkward I could not even lie still. Somebody say something, I thought. Somebody make it not weird. I lasted 8 minutes before I shot up and announced that I could not sleep. I guess they decided on a ceasefire for the Ukraine, I cried out helplessly. And there ended the silence. As we filmed the first season, we did not have a definite air date from NBC. I was a little worried, but not too worried, because as an actor, I often behave like a child and leave the worrying to my bosses. Then, as the season was drawing to a close, three folks from Netflix showed up. What in the world? I didn't think, because I was busy calculating how much time was left before they would bring out the mid-morning Caesar wraps. We completed shooting the season a few days later, and the following Monday afternoon, Tina and Robert called me to tell me that we would be streaming on Netflix. Oh, I said, unsure whether this was good or bad news. It turned out to be excellent news, because Netflix is an awesome place to be, and Kimmy was able to find its audience. Also, we had gotten picked up by Netflix when House of Cards and Orange is the New Black were streaming their second seasons and taking the entertainment industry by storm. This felt like a very cool club to be a part of. Filming Kimmy has been a profound learning experience for me. If and when future generations of performers aspiring to play young women rescued from underground bunkers ever ask me about the lessons I have learned while playing a young woman rescued from an underground bunker, here is what I will tell them. 1. If Kimmy Schmidt can remain hopeful, then you can, too. One of my great hobbies in life is feeling sorry for myself. Nothing makes me feel more alive than when I suspect I have been wronged. Oh, the energy! But this character, Kimmy, this young woman who was kidnapped while walking to school one morning and then held captive in an underground bunker where she was tortured repeatedly for 15 years, this woman insists on looking at the bright side of things. As corny as it sounds, when I'm having a bad day, I give myself a nudge. I think of Kimmy in that situation, and I get my act together. Calling on my inner Kimmy has been particularly helpful during the Trump administration. You thought I would go the entire book without getting political, but at last it comes out. That is what she said! 2. Hot pink pants aren't for everyone. Look, I love Kimmy's style. I love that she is bright and vibrant and unapologetically girlish while being a tough and rugged fighter. And I think that Tina Nigro, our genius costume designer, is unmatched in her ability to make characters come alive. But I do not love wearing Kimmy's hot pink pants. I had to wear these pants for, I think, a total of a year. I was first introduced to them in March of 2014. Hello, pants, I said, in the way that Carrie Bradshaw says hello to a pair of Manolos in that one scene of Sex and the City. I was alone in a half trailer when I said it, out loud and to no one, but it made me laugh, sort of. As soon as I pulled those pink pants up, I thought, nope. As we all know by now, I have powerful quads with which I am well pleased. But in these tight pink pants, my squashed quads look like neon sausages. It was not beautiful. I didn't know at the time that, like the ghost of Christmas past, these pants would return again to haunt me. We shot the pilot in March, but then we had to reshoot some scenes the following August. Out came those pants again. I probably wore the pants in only two other episodes that first season, but because we spent about 6 days on each episode, it felt like much more than that. Once we wrapped the first season and found out that we would be on Netflix instead of NBC, we all flew out to Los Angeles for a promo shoot. The creatives had decided on a concept where everything is in black and white except for Kimmy, who is bright and vibrant and wearing those pink pants. I think I only wore the pink pants one more time in the second season, and that was for a flashback. And then, in the third season, a happy day came my way. Kimmy donates a bunch of her clothes to charity, including the pink pants. I felt sad for them, but relieved for me. 3. Just do what Tina Fey does. In season 2, Tina Fey played Kimmy's therapist, Dr. Andrea Baden. She starred in 7 episodes, and I noticed something about Tina Fey during this time. She did not say one word about her hair, makeup, or wardrobe. She put on the clothes that the wardrobe department had selected for her, and she sat still while her hair and makeup team gave her touch-ups. At the end of the workday, she changed back into her personal clothes and went home. There was no adjusting or pleas for extra layers when outside in the cold. There were no whispered conversations between actress and costume designer about not feeling comfortable in certain pieces. I think because Tina Fey is a writer, producer, and actress, she is able to see the big picture. She lets people do the jobs they were given, and she keeps the day moving. I would also suspect that actresses whining about clothes is something for which she has little tolerance. Once, while we were filming the pilot, Tina Fey came into my dressing room during a scene change. "I was thinking of trying SoulCycle," she said to me, "and one of the makeup ladies said you love it. What's it like?" My eyes grew large, and I couldn't talk fast enough. "It's an indoor spin class, sure," I say, giddy, "but it's really a journey of the spirit." Tina Fey nods and looks interested, and 20 minutes later, we are called back to set. Tina Fey created 30 Rock. She was the head writer at Saturday Night Live. She wrote and produced an award-winning stage version of Mean Girls for Broadway. She is a movie star, best-selling author, Too Many Times to Count Emmy winner, and she has 2 young daughters, plus a husband and a dog. She does not have time to chat about SoulCycle. She was being thoughtful because she knew how much I loved it. Reporters often ask me what it is like working with Tina Fey. "What sort of advice does she give you?" they inquire. "What lessons have you learned from her?" Surprisingly, Tina Fey does not set up an advice booth, a la Lucy from Peanuts. She shows you how a person should behave by being the person who behaves. Anyway, see what she's doing? Do that. As I'm recording this, we are about to begin filming the 4th, and what will turn out to be the final, season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It always feels like we are heading back to school, but a really cool school where you get to say hilarious lines that other people write for you, and the hallways smell like poo because there are no windows in any of the stage bathrooms. At the risk of sounding like an old aunt, I have marveled at how far Kimmy has come in this show, and I will miss playing her. She started off as a wide-eyed rube eating gummy sharks for dinner, and has grown into a confident woman who briefly dated David Diggs. Could even he get me tickets to Hamilton? No, he could not. But sometimes it's not about getting tickets to Hamilton. Sometimes it's just about feeling comfortable in your own pants. I know I just talked about how I didn't feel comfortable in those pink pants. Also, the expression is feeling comfortable in your own skin. My point is, sometimes it's about making it through those moments of discomfort until you do feel comfortable. Also, I really wanted to end this book on the word pants.
My Squirrel Days was written and read by Ellie Kemper. The recording engineer was Catherine Cook at CDM Sound Studios. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Tiffany Ferrari. My Squirrel Days was produced and directed by Tara Thomas. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. My Squirrel Days is available in print from Scribner.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.